Hello.
Hi there, is that Michelle?
It is, yes.
Hi, Michelle, it's Daniel from MMA Legal. How are you?
I'm okay, just one moment. I'm just gonna get myself in a
Yep.
different room just now.
No problem.
Yeah, it was a female, I think, called given
It
his witness statement
was, yes.
yesterday, so it was herself had said this, obviously.
Yeah, it was my colleague Leah. Unfortunately, she's just on another witness statement call at the
No, no,
moment.
no, I don't mind. The issue
Okay.
is just calling and conversing with him,
Yeah.
for as a female. But
Yeah,
beg your
not a
pardon, can I
problem.
just take 1 minute to catch my breath? Is that okay? I
Yeah,
have
that's absolutely fine,
got some
Michelle.
respiratory issues. 1 moment, hold on.
No problem.
Yeah, there. Yeah, and I did suggest the iPhone because the mobile were quite rural and sometimes, the connection can come and go.
Yeah, the signal gets lost sometimes. Yeah, no problem at all. So, just for data protection, Michelle, could I take the postcode?
Yeah, IV3
Yeah.
HIZ.
Brilliant. And just Colin's date of birth.
11/3/72.
And just the email address as well, please.
Michelle and Colin, 143@btinternet.com.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. So, just to make you aware that calls are recorded for training and monitoring purposes, and we will be conducting the supporting statements now. So, just to go for a brief of the supporting statement, it's a little bit of a question and answer. So, I'll go through each section as it comes, but just to make you aware, the questionnaire is intended to support the claimant's witness statements by describing the impact that their past abuse has had on their daily life. Right,
Absolutely,
so.
I understand. I
Right.
can understand the importance of that as well. Because
Yeah.
sometimes, on the outside, if you didn't witness it yourself, and I just witnessed the result of
Yeah.
these
Yeah.
things.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the first section is just a brief about you section. So, I've got your full name as Michelle Sanders. And the relationship to the claimant is your Colin's wife. Yes, not a problem. And how long have you known or lived with Colin?
But I met Colin in 1997.
Met him in
I
1997.
was 18 and he was 24. It was a long time.
Yeah. Put in 1997. Okay, and how long would you say you've lived with Colin, roughly?
Since then, yeah.
Oh, since 1997.
Well, say 1998 because we dated for the first year,
Yeah.
yeah. 19, about a year after that, yeah.
No
Got
problem.
pregnant.
No
Quite
worries.
quick going, though.
Yeah, no worries. And how often do you currently see or support Colin?
Every single day.
Okay, so that's the about you section completed. I'm going to move on now to the your knowledge of abuse section. So, first question will be, when did you first become aware that Colin had experienced abuse in childhood or while in care?
Quite difficult because it kind of came in dribs and drabs. What my first ever inkling that he was in care, or my first knowledge of him being
Yeah,
assaulted.
just your, like you say, your first inkling that he was abused in care, not just in care itself, but when did you first find out about the obviously the abuse that he suffered in care?
The abuse, not that he would live, not that he was brought up in care. So yeah.
Yeah, no,
Right, okay,
just the abuse.
bear with me, I'm taking time to work out because it took him quite some time.
Yeah, not a problem. Take your time, of course.
Don't think. Check this now. So she's 19. He opened up to me about 12 years ago.
Twelve years ago. No problem. And how was it that you became aware of it?
Our relationship has been affected severely by the issues that he has, and he had to explain to me that, there was a reason for this. It wasn't something he could just switch off. So he had to, sit and tell me, everything that he'd gone through, and then everything
Yeah.
made sense. And to be honest with you, it saved our marriage because I probably would have left him had he not.
Yeah, of course. So I apologise if there's any silence on the call. I just
That's
want to
okay.
make sure I'm typing up everything.
No,
Don't miss
you're
anything.
good. I had to understand his behaviours and his mistrust and his, you know, his commitment issues and his inability to be part of a family naturally. You know,
yeah.
there's lots of things that, like, incidents that happened and that didn't
yeah.
make sense to me. You know.
Has the claimant spoken to you about what happened? So has Colin
yeah.
spoken to you about what happened then? Yeah.
He told me about all the different, yeah, everything.
Yeah, and how difficult did Colin find it to discuss that with yourself?
Very, very. It happened over, like, multiple different times. And, you know, initially he was quite vague, you know, started off with, like, the first sexual assault by his uncle, you know. And then they knew that he'd been residential care, and I knew that there'd been a lot of physical abuse and a lot of, like, emotional manipulation and things. And
yeah.
But then, you know, the more we started opening up about it, the more he started telling me more and more and more and more. And he was, you know, it got difficult for me to hear. So I was
yeah.
quite emotional. I was crying, you know. And then it caused difficulties afterwards, because all of a sudden I knew all these his secrets, and the mistrust he had before, it kind of just heightened it in a way as well, you know. So
it
was kind of bittersweet for him, but it helped
it's
me understand him and made me realize that, you know, it's not his fault. He is the way he is, and, you know,
yeah.
I just need to try and, you know, help him with that, and then hopefully, you know, then
yeah.
his life won't be such a struggle, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just put down that yes, he's told me everything. He's told me in drips and drabs. He's told me about
the abuse initially. He had a fear that once I knew, then I'd look at him differently.
Yeah.
It would make me look at him in a different way. I would think that, you know, he's homosexual, and it would, you know, stop me being so attracted to him. It
yeah.
made me think that he possibly had inclinations like that himself, and it would make me worry about that. And then it made him quite angry towards me, because all of a sudden, wait a minute, you if you leave me, you can go and tell anyone, you
yeah.
know. It was all of a sudden like I had this power that could, you know, and it, so it caused this many problems that, you know, solved as well in the beginning, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've just he's told me about the abuse initially, but no specific details until a bit later on, where he's
mm-hmm.
told me the full story.
Yeah.
And he thought that if he told me that, I would not be sexually attracted to him anymore.
Think he was possibly like that himself. Because, you know, yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard it, but you've heard people talking, they say a lot of people who are abused go up to abuse themselves because they confuse sex with love.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Colin has had this issue where he thinks sex, you know, is a way of showing love, and I've always known that since the beginning, and I've been the opposite. I was raised completely different to Colin. I mean, polar opposite. Amazing,
yeah.
like upbringing, and to me, sex and love are completely—they're not the same. They don't, you know, they're completely irrelevant to each
yeah.
other. So, I forgot about my train of thought there.
No, it's fine. It's absolutely fine.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So, and that he thought that, like, you know, when we've got four children and things like that, and you go through pregnancy and then postpartum
yeah.
and that, you know, you don't have time for, like, the intimacy and things like that. So if we had a spell, you know, we weren't being intimate, then Colin would take that and say, I wasn't loving him anymore, you know, because
yeah.
I wasn't having sex with him anymore, because that's, if I had sex with him, then that's like confirmation that I love him.
Yeah.
You know, whereas to me, absolutely, you know, I could go the rest of my life without having it, and I could still be in love with somebody, you know, it's so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to
yeah,
you?
No, of course it does completely. I just
mm-hmm.
want to try and summarise it a bit in a few notes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've covered that question there now.
Yeah.
So just finish typing that up. So
the
changes in Collie that you've observed, this is the next section now. So in terms of changes, what sort of emotional or behavioural difficulties have you observed in Colin? So, for example, we'll start off. Have you noticed any sort of anxiety, depression, or low moods with Colin?
Is this since he's opened up to me, or do you mean like since I've known him?
Since you've known him, yeah. Just overall.
Since I've known him, I've always known that he had an anxiety issue. Within the first year then we got together, you know, I fell pregnant, and I remember around about that time him going to the GP and getting put on diazepam for an anxiety that he had. I knew he had a lot of anger. He was we were young, we used to go out and partying things a lot, and he was very aggressive when we were out. You know, he'd always deliberately get into fights with people. You know, if somebody didn't cause a fight with me, he would make a fight happen, you know. And I never quite understood it, you know, because I knew he wasn't a bully. I knew he wasn't a horrible person. So why would he have all this aggression inside him? And it's because he was hiding all this, you know. And you know,
yeah.
The only way to get it out was to be quite aggressive, you know. And so he would fight, you know, getting out quite a lot of fight. He would hurt himself, you know. And he was hurting himself. Complete no trust issue, no trust at all. Like, and I always thought that. I knew that he wasn't raised by his parents, he was in and out of care, and I thought, well, maybe, you know, his mum was quite a promiscuous woman, had lots of men throughout her whole life, and I thought, well, a mother's of some first impression of what a woman is, you know, and I thought, well, maybe if I show him that women are different by staying with him, being faithful, and in time, the trust will, you know, will come.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't have that didn't happen for many. I mean, I had children with him. I committed to him. I was faithful to him, but he still found it very, very hard to trust me. And sometimes he would say things, and not just trust me, it's just anyone around us. He would always like saying everything that anybody was saying or doing, or if male friends of his, you know, he would question their motive, you know, towards me and things like that, and he would just question absolutely everybody and everything, and he would never really himself with anyone else. It's like he's always protecting himself, you know. It's like, you know, I'll hurt you before you hurt me, or I'll leave you before you leave me, type thing, you know. So that, I always knew he was like that. But I thought in time, if I stayed with him and I started a family with him, then that would show him, you know, like, you know, a family for him. I'm very close to my family, my extended family, and they welcomed him into it. So I thought that, but it wasn't natural to him, because he'd never really lived in not a normal family environment, even with our own children. I had to reassure him multiple occasions when they're very young, growing up, that their behaviour with him, intimate behaviour with him, was normal. Between a father and a child, like, there was nothing sexual in it, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with him. You know, I think that him. I give an example. Our third child, our daughter, when she was maybe 4 or 5, he was sitting on the couch, and she was down behind him on the couch, and she started like sucking like the back of his neck, and he like stop, and I was like, oh, come here, you silly girl, like, oh. And then later that night, he's like. Can I think you're saying? I'm like, yeah. And he was like, see what happened earlier. I was like, yeah. And he said, I freaked out and panicked. I was like, why? And he said, because I didn't know what was the right thing to do. I don't know why was she doing that to me? And I was like, because she's your dad and she's 4. She's just, you know, it means nothing to her. She's just like being physically close to you. He was happy cuddling, you know, like, you know, holding hands, you know, sitting near that. But because she was sucking his neck, he found out that, you know, he wasn't, it was like he didn't know where the line was to what behaviour was correct and wasn't correct. But that's your child. You don't let any child do that. But your own child, yes, that's fine.
So
there's been many occasions with our children growing up where he's given me that look, and I've had to say, no, it's okay. You know, like, it's okay. And, like, we've got a 9-year-old son at the moment, and he's a bit of a joker, you know, and
Yeah.
So he'll put his hand on the couch, and when Cotton's dad will sit down, his dad will sit on his hand, and he'll be like, get your hand out of there, and I have to say, on the neck.
Yeah.
You know, don't like make him think that there's anything wrong with what he's doing there, because there's nothing wrong with him touching his dad's bum.
Yeah.
He said, but I don't like it. And I'm like, I know you don't, but to him, it means nothing because he's his dad. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
And it's just like, so, yeah, the way things just are so easy for people who have not gone through that, with what's appropriate and not appropriate. Like, I think it's like I said before, like that fear, when he opened up to me, but I started thinking that he had that in him. So maybe, you know, he was more aware of his behaviour, you know? So
yeah,
he always needed that reassurance from me. No, that's okay. No, you're not doing anything wrong there, you know?
Yeah, of course. I just want to try and reel it back a bit, Michelle. Do apologise. Just want to make sure that we get through the statement just step by step. So I will take examples of different things on the impact on Colin, like you said, how it's affected him there with his daughter. I will take that a little bit later on in the statement. So apologies if I have to ask you again and you have to tell me the same thing again.
Just
want to make sure that I get everything right and in the right sections. So I've got the example for anxiety, depression, and
a lot of anger.
Mood. That was going to be the next section there.
Right,
so,
okay, leave that.
What sort of emotional behavioural difficulties have you observed in Colin, such as anger, irritability, or emotional withdrawal?
For it, like since I've known him.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, I'm just trying to understand your question without going like that.
No, it's okay. It's if you want to just give me a brief example.
Anxiety has always been so severe, like from the day I met him. Being around my family members, no matter if it was my mum, dad, and things like that, his anxiety, he was shit, he was sweat, going out to family events, you know, like if we had a wedding to attend or a party, or you know, because we didn't have family, it was always my family events, you know. He would, you know, try to make excuses not to go, and things like that. And then when he would go, he would need alcohol to calm himself, and to be able to do things and go to places like that, you know. So he did avoid a lot of you know, public places where he would have to interact with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned before about, of course, when you were going out and Colin was quite aggressive, or you were both quite aggressive. So just tell me a bit more about that. Was that so you going on a night out, for instance, you were going out drinking together, or what sort of instances was Colin angry when he was going out?
He would accuse any other male in the room looking at me.
Right.
And he would always get into altercations with them outside, you know, the nightclubs and pubs and things like that afterwards, you know, like physical fights. And it's like, now knowing back, I think he enjoyed getting physically hurt, you know, like, because if he didn't find somebody to fight, he would hit himself, you know.
Yeah. So just put, he would accuse any other male in the room of looking at him or me. This would always fight in with other men outside the nightclubs.
Yeah, and I mean like groups of men, like by himself. So like, you know, like he was putting himself in a situation where he was receiving a lot of. Injury himself. It wasn't like he was wanting to go and hurt other people. This is what I'm saying. Now I look back and I think about it and I think it was like he was enjoying getting hurt himself, you know?
Yeah.
That did subside a wee bit when he started lifting weights and using that form of exercise to take that sort of aggression out, you know?
Yeah.
And that, I noticed that helped, so I sort of encouraged that.
Yeah, of course. So in terms of things like emotional withdrawal, I know you mentioned that he, you know, would make excuses to turn up to family events, things like that. What other...
He would take him, like, I set myself and the children in the living room. He would go and sit in the bedroom by himself. My mum and dad would come. He would make an excuse and go, pretend he wasn't well, and go into the bedroom. And
right.
You know what I mean? So he shut himself away a lot. Not answer the door to people and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Don't answer the phone, you know.
Okay, so in terms of Colin's difficulty trusting others, what sort of difficulties in trust have you observed?
He doesn't trust anyone. He doesn't trust anyone in the world. Not a single soul. He doesn't. Even to this day, he trusts me more than he trusts anyone. And because I've earned it.
Yeah.
But we're in almost 30 years together, you know, and so it's taken a long time. And still every now and again, he'll have a moment of, you know, you'll leave me one day and what? You know, so
yeah.
There's still that, you know, it's like, I don't think he'll ever get rid of that, you know, of abandonment, you know.
Yeah.
He always, like, questions everybody's motives. It could even be just, like, a neighbour coming in and speaking to me in the garden, and they could just be chatting about day-to-day stuff, walk away, and he'll question their motives, that's not what they... Yeah, that was a conversation, but that's not what they were really wanting to speak to me for. They want to speak to me because they enjoy being around me. You know, like, he questions everybody's motives.
Question everyone's motives. So in terms of things like shame, guilt, or low self-worth, have you seen any examples of those sorts of things in Colin?
Well, the shame and the guilt came more after once he opened up and told me, because then there was the shame that I knew that this had happened to him.
Yeah.
What I've come to understand is the older he got, the abuse that happened is when he was more aged. He was more shamed about that because he was a bit older. You know, like when he was young and he wasn't able to get away from situations and things like that. You know, he doesn't feel as much shame about that. But, like, you know, I did go into, you know, teenage years and things, whereas he feels the need to try and explain to me. You know, I know I was a teenager and that, but, you know, and I could do, like, you know, but by that point, there was a whole, you know, there was more to it than the actual act. You know, there was the manipulation, there was a lot of things. You know, so he feels a lot of shame about it going on so late on, in his own life.
Yeah.
And then there's the shame that he thinks, you know, like, do I think that he has that in him as well? Because he experienced so much of it. The shame that nobody ever loved him. That his parents walked away on him, you know, like, his own mother, you know, like, he has tried for years and years to get his mother's love, and she's always rejected him, always, you know. So I think that's the core of him not trusting anyone, because if his own mother has never loved him, then how can anyone else serve him, you know? And then he says, like, watching me and raise our children, and, you know, I'm a very maternal woman, because my mother was an amazing mother, my granny was an amazing grandmother, so I was brought up around that. And he said that that's made it even harder for him, because he's seeing what you know, how natural my mother's instinct is, and you know, he can force his own mother to love him, you know. So what is so wrong with him? What is so bad about him that you know, that he couldn't be loved, you know? And
just poor, the shame and guilt came more after he opened up and told me. He would feel ashamed after I knew everything that happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
He feels much shame about the abuse that happened to him a bit later on in his teenage years. He has the shame that no one ever loved him after trying for years to get his mother's love, and she always rejected him. This caused a lot of shame and harder for him to understand that he could be loved.
Yeah, and then once I started encouraging him to to get the help for it as well, you know, and open up the, you know, they start with the GP, and then he went, he did try counselling a few times and that. He struggled with that because he struggled opening up, and, you know, it took many, many years for him to say it to me, and to say it to a stranger, who'd like, and he would always say to me, that person's going to go home at the end of the day, I don't know who they're going home to, I don't, you know, and, yeah. You know, it's that, yeah, so that was always very difficult for him. Even doing this, you know, has been such a really, really hard thing for him.
Because, yeah, I can
you
imagine.
Know, and the fact that he's aren't local, I think that helps, the fact that he's aren't local, you know.
Yeah.
Because, like, when he goes to, like, local GPs or local, you know, the mental health team and that, and you'd be like, what, like, have I walked down the street and they were past them? What, like, you know, what if they know when our children or, you know, what's, oh, I know,
yeah.
He, you know, and so that's quite a lot of shame that comes with it as well, you know, with anybody else knowing about it, even professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of things like flashbacks or nightmares and disturbed sleep.
Oh, no. I think Colin first approached his GP back about 1999 for issues with sleep. And he was put on medication, temazepam, you know, like a sleep tablet. But it's not for long-term use, so it helped where he had it, but then when they tried to stop it, so then... He did see a doctor up at the local hospital, and the doctor at the hospital said you do have insomnia, but this is at a point where he wasn't being completely honest about everything, you know. He just said it was just a sleep problem, not realizing that. But the thing was, he struggled to sleep during the night when everybody in the house was sleeping, but then when I'd get up in the morning and get the kids off school and do the housework, he'll fall asleep on the couch and he will sleep sound if he knows I'm awake. You know, it's not that he's sleep deprived. It's just he can only sleep at certain times. Like, if I'm not in the room, if he wakes up during the night and I'm not in the room, you know, like, I'm looking for me, where are you? He always has to sleep. Where he's facing the door. You know, like, it's like, but I can sleep anywhere, you know, no matter, I sleep, you know, when I went to one of the psychology meetings with him, and the psychologist said that, you know, the sleeping during the day is because he knows he's safe to fall asleep because I'm there, you know, do what I mean? Whereas during the night, when everybody else is sleeping, it's like, you know, the world's quiet, and I think a lot of the abuse did happen at, you know, bedtime, you know? So, you know, bedtime was never an enjoyable thing for him as a child, you know? So he used to always want to sleep on the couch. Slept on the couch a lot, you know, during the day, rather than sleep in bed at night.
He
can't switch the telly off and just lie down and close his eyes. Colin has to have the TV on and be sitting up and allow his tablets to make him fall asleep. He doesn't fall asleep naturally. Like I'll lie in bed and once I start getting tired, I'll close my eyes. And I could lie there for a while and I just allow myself to relax and slowly drift off. He's unable to do that. He's unable to close his eyes because then his thoughts run away with him and it's not good. He has to focus on something and hear something. And the TV stays on all night long. If he wakes up, because he doesn't go more than like maybe 2-3 hours without waking up. It might not be for long, but he will wake up. And if the TV's off, he's got to turn it back on.
Yeah.
There has to be like sound for him to hear. So then he's not lying there thinking in his own head, you know.
Yeah.
He's always been like that. It's always been the way. He wakes up quite a lot during the night. It can be like, you know, like cold sweats. They've got cold sweats. Pillow soaking wet, it's hot and saturated with sweat, you know. And say, oh, terrible nightmare I've had there, you know, and then he could be so, he'll want to stay awake for a while because he's frightened if he goes back to sleep too quickly, he might go back into that same nightmare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's when, again, he'll be sitting on the telly and try and focus on that to, you know, get that nightmare out of his head.
Yeah.
nap as well, like from my sleep. Like if we have to go somewhere, I wake them after waking up quite gently.
Yeah.
You know, because I've learned that in the past.
Yeah.
Not to like shake him or like, no, no, go, oh my God, wake up, wake up. Because if he wakes up, he can get quite a fright, you know.
Yeah.
It has to be quite, yeah.
Always have to wake him up gently.
Yeah, yeah.
So in terms of any sort of panicking, fear or becoming overwhelmed in situations?
Yeah, the build up to us going out anywhere, he gets overwhelmed, even silly thing like going to the supermarket or going to a GP appointment or going to the dentist, he'll think about it for like, if it's an afternoon appointment all morning, he'll think about it. He'll think about it, you know, and he'll get himself worked up. And like when he knew that Colin had his phone call yesterday, so the day prior to that, the whole day, he thought, oh my God, I'm getting a phone call tomorrow. But, you know, and he thinks about it constantly to a point where it's kind of like, how do I explain it? He does, I mean, he doesn't mean to be like this, but he is. It's like myself and the children are living a life around him. And I walk into the room, the TV's on the living room, and he won't even look at the TV, he'll be staring at the floor. And I'll be like, Colin, or my son, and then, you know, son, and say, Dad, blah, blah, and he'll ask my question. Dad, blah, blah, and I'll say, Colin, that burns your smoke to 3 times. Oh, sorry. It's like he's not present, you know, because he's in his own head.
Yeah, it's like he just gets into it.
Yeah, and then he gets so panicky as well. I'm trying to think of an example of panic. Like somebody's phoned and he doesn't feel up to speaking to them. And I've answered and I go, yeah, 2 seconds, I'll just get him. And then he'll like, no, like you're changing sound to me. Like, whatever it is, you just said, I'll put them on to him. And I'll be like, pass phone to him. And he'll pan, and he's like, and what state is into, you know, because he's not prepared himself for whatever, you know, like that phone call or that conversation, no matter who it's with, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's not in that good head that day.
Yeah.
When he's busy, like yesterday before the phone call, and after the phone call, he was out doing the gardening, cutting the grass. We've got a massive garden to keep himself busy. When he has something to concentrate on and focus, you know, to do, it's not so bad. Like, I'm looking out the window right now, and he's standing talking to my next door neighbour, so an old gentleman next door. And he's been talking to him the whole time I've been talking to you. And that, I can tell that he's doing that with ease, because he wouldn't be there for talking that long, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yet there's other days where if he could be in the garden, he could see somebody walking down on the, here they come, and he'll quickly get in the house.
Yeah.
You know?
You said he would be sometimes sitting in the garden and he'd see someone maybe walking past the house or towards the house and he'd quickly go back inside himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rather than have to have a conversation, you know.
Yeah.
I became like his like his government appointee over the years, you know, like, because he struggles so much with telephone calls and things like that, you know. So they officially named me his appointee. I mean, so, and I used to go to every appointment with him, GP appointment, that because the anxiety and the panic be that bad that he doesn't process the information that's given to him at the time. Afterwards, I'd have to go through it all with him again, and he's calmer and more relaxed and at home, and you know, break it down for him and say, no, this is what they meant. And because he can take things incorrectly on, he can miss out on so much information as well because he's not processing it, you know, because he's in that state of panic at the time.
Yeah, because the anxiety is taking
over. Yeah. The psychologist said it's like kind of fight or flight sort of not way of mind. And when he's in that, like, you know, so I try to teach him different techniques. The elastic band around the wrist, snap himself back, and you know, and look around the room and find five things that or the colour of red and blah blah. You know, like you try to teach him different techniques like that, but he does try, but they don't really work, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's that instilled in him and it's been that severe. It's, I don't think he'll ever, you know, live with it. But he's, that's why I'm encouraging him to do this as well, because part of the anger is, there was never any justice for any single person that ever done anything wrong to him.
Yeah.
And now it's too late for most of them, because most of them are deceased, you know?
Yeah.
So they all got, in his head, they all got away with it. They all got away with doing something, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where the anger comes into it, you know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And even though I say to him, like, you know, that, you know, you're allowing them to keep hurting you, you know what I mean? You're able to stop that now, and, you know, you broke the cycle by, look at, you know, the life you have now and the family we, you know, we're doing. Look,
yeah, of course.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It happened, and they got away with it, and it's, I think it's the, nobody's ever acknowledged it actually happened either, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a lot, that's where he gets angry, that's where that anger comes from.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in terms of things like, self-harm or suicidal thoughts, or just comments about not wanting to live itself.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard Colin say any of these things yet?
Yeah. He said self-harm, not like pointless with that. He just burned himself. He used to be a smoker, and he's not smoked for like the last 2 years, but when he was a smoker, he would...
Sorry, Michelle, the line just keeps...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah,
that's better.
But when he was a smoker years ago, I didn't know him. It was going on for a while, but he used to do it in places that I didn't notice. He would burn himself with his cigarettes.
Right.
On his, like, the back of his hands and things like that, and the inside of his arms and stuff. He would do that to himself. He would say to me... But I've had a gun, right now I shoot myself. Things like that.
Yeah.
He'd say that, he's like, take my car keys. I'm like, well, take the car keys away. I'm like, why? He's like, if I get in that car right now, I'll drive it into a brick wall. And then he'll say things like, if I didn't have you and the children, I wouldn't be alive today. If it wasn't for you, because you're the only reason that I'm not doing it. Because it's not fair to do that to you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like he does have the suicidal feelings, but he knows the steps to take to ensure that he's not going to, like, follow through with it, because he doesn't want to die, you know, because he's got a good family, he's got a wife, and he's got children that love him, you know, he's got a good, you know, and he knows that. But so I'm saying these feelings of worthlessness and like shame that I'm saying they're that embedded in him that. Sometimes, I mean, they come, you know, he's got no control over them, and when they do come, you know, that's what I'm saying, he can say that, you know, don't want to go in the car, or, you know, I've had a gun, might never shoot myself, things like that, because he knows he's not got a gun, you know what I mean?
yeah, of course. So, in terms of things like alcohol and substance abuse, or any other addictive behaviours that you've observed in Colin, what sort of things like that?
In the first, since I met him up until like the first 20 years, he abused lots of stuff. He abused alcohol.
Yeah.
He would always have to have alcohol every night, and he wouldn't get drunk. He would always have to have maybe a few beers before bed, and it was all like it's something. That's what I'm saying. He can't naturally fall asleep. He has to knock himself out, and the alcohol along with his tablets would help that. He also was a really, really big cannabis smoker.
Yeah.
Before I met him, and into a year or two of me knowing him, he took quite a lot of classes. When we'd go out, nights out and things like that, and he told me, like, a couple of years leading up to meeting me, he partied a lot, and he took classes because it was the only time he felt free. You know, it was kind of because it detached him from reality. It was like the only time he ever forgot about that sort of side of things, you know. So that's why he used them. But even though, I mean, like, he's not drunk alcohol now in about 6 years. He's not smoked cannabis in about the same, and he's not a Class C's in about 12, 13 years, something like that. So, you know,
yeah,
over the years, he's learned that these things that are just a crutch, they don't actually help.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, some of them can make things worse. But yeah, he has tried to use all the different, you know, substances and things like that to thinking it will take it away, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
He says that's the things where now, like, now that he's not ever, like, under the influence of things, like, it's harder now because, you know, there's not that escape, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so this is now him having to face it, and, you know, and having to try and sort of find some sort of closure, you know, and a way of living with it. And
yeah,
hopefully by doing this, you know, and because he's never hot and, like, he's always been unsure of facts, you know, and things like that, and
yeah,
and like I said, and never dealing with it while he could. So now, you know, I'm saying if you do this, process it, and then try, it'll never go away, but maybe you might finally be able to move on from it, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah,
than
yeah, of course. That's just one thing that we really do hope,
yeah,
after,
yeah,
after all these applicants are through.
Mm-hmm.
Just hope it gives them some sort of sense of peace.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I mean, like, you've, like I said that to him, it's like you've stood up and you've told your story and you've, you know, you've said this has happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, instead of hiding it and being ashamed of it.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
the next section
yeah.
of the supporting statement is the day-to-day impact. So
yeah.
in terms of everyday life, how does Colin's past affect their everyday life, would you say?
Do you mean, I can say so much, so I'm just trying to, like, I'll try and be more thingy about your question.
Obviously,
you've
gone over bits beforehand, things like
yeah.
Struggling to get up in the morning because he's not had a good sleep
yeah.
The night before.
Yeah.
Can be things like basic hygiene.
So he'll sleep, he'll nap a lot during the day, you know, he'll fall asleep. But then, did you say hygiene?
Yeah, just day-to-day
when
things.
It's funny you're saying that because that's a big thing. And, like, I don't know if you're aware, like, our 25-year-old son still lives at home. Our 19-year-old daughter still lives at home. And because
right.
they're adults, you know, they're more aware of, you know, they know, they don't know details, but they know dad suffered abuse and they know dad was raised in residential care, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But they've been now starting to comment on his hygiene. His lack of it. Where
yeah.
he doesn't look after himself properly, you know.
Yeah.
I never really fully understand why he doesn't do that, but basically, we had a new an upgrade to our bathroom 3 weeks ago, and he hasn't
yep.
used the shower yet. He'll wear the same sort of clothes for days and days and days as well. Sometimes he sleeps in them.
Yeah.
If he knows, like, he's got an appointment to go to, and that, you know, he will make an effort. He'll have a shave and he'll wash his face and that. But he won't, you know, he won't have a shower. And it's now affecting his skin. He's got dry, flaky skin all over his body and all that as well now, you know.
Yeah.
But people don't see that because he's got his underclothing, you know, so it's not an issue to him, you know. But I see it, you know.
Yeah.
Day to day, we don't go many places. We don't have, spread out, we spend most every day at home, but we're lucky because we live in a beautiful place, you know. So, you know, we can enjoy the outside. We have a massive garden, we live right on the banks of Loch Ness, you know. So,
yeah.
But we moved out here 15 years ago now, and before we moved out here, we lived in Inverness City. And so going out and outside the house was something that he never wanted to do. Like, he was like a hermit, because if he walked outside the front door, he's going to bang into somebody. He's going to see people. Whereas here, like, the village has only got, like, 12 houses in the village, and we're surrounded by farmer's fields, and, you know, so, like, we can go out. Here he can go out And like, he doesn't have to speak to people, he doesn't have to see people, you know. No, it's quite a touristy place, so if we do see people, it's people that don't know him. So we spend a lot of time, you know, outside, but we don't go into the city much unless we have to, you know, like for shopping and things.
Yeah.
When we do go into the city, if I have to go to different places, he sit in the car and wait for me in the car, and I'll go and do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
He's he's a talented drummer. He loves music. It's one thing he does. Have
oh, really?
Music. Yeah. And years and years ago, while he was, you know, drinking alcohol and taking the narcotics, he played in different bands. So, you know, we'd go out to clubs and he would play the drums, but he had to always, you know, be under the influence of something to have the confidence to be in that environment. Whereas now he's not, you know, he's not able to do that anymore. And so, once he stopped doing that, he would still like get a wee electric kit for the house. The electric kit's been sitting upstairs in the cupboard for the last 8 years, gathering dust. He's not even got.
Yeah.
So, you know, that he's lost even the love for like doing that now, you know. It's fishing. Fishing was another big hobby of his as well. Like, he used to be fishing all the time. I mean, like, you could cast in a Loch Ness from standing in our back garden, you know. So I thought once we moved out here, he would be doing it every day. He's not used his fishing. I think he's used it, big pardon, once a few weeks ago. He took my son fishing. Prior to that, he hadn't been fishing in 3 years. So it's like he's lost the want to do things, you know, and go places and motivate himself, you know. He's got no motivation whatsoever to do anything.
Yeah, so in terms of the drums, you said that he used to be under the influence whenever he was performing or whenever he was playing the drums, but obviously he doesn't play the drums now because he associates the drum kit with the substance abuse.
No, it's like he doesn't want to, like before he went out to a gig, he would have to have like a few whiskies to relax him enough to go into a pub or a club, you know.
Yeah.
And now that he doesn't want to put that into his body anymore, because, you know, he's not getting any younger, and he knows that, you know, how much he's abused his body with, you know, alcohol and substance over the years, that it's not doing him any good. So, and he's not able to do it.
Yeah.
With a sober head and a straight head, because the anxiety and the panic is being in a crowd.
Yeah.
Who he might see, you know, like it's just not worth it for him, you know.
Yeah.
He's just given it up, and it's a shame because it's such a big part of his life, you know. It's something that his dad taught him. His dad was a drummer, you know. So he's always, you know, drumming is a thing that connected him with his dad, you know.
Yeah.
But so he's given that up as well, you know. So gives him more of a feeling of worthlessness. It's like, because he's, back then it was like, he knew it was something that he was talented at, but he was really, really good at, you know. And he was also a really good fly fisherman. Now he's not doing those things. You know, he thinks he's a rubbish father, he's a rubbish husband, you know. And now he's not doing those things either. The self-worth has got even, you know, is lowered even more. Because, you know, his opinion of himself is worthless in anything and everything, even life, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that he can't find it in him to do these things again, but maybe in time, I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, day to day is just watch his telly a lot.
Yeah.
Listen to music, and like I said, if we get in the car, he'll just sit in the car and I'll go run about and do what I've got to do.
I'm just typing up about the time he was a fisherman. You said that he doesn't do the fishing anymore. He has taken his son fishing, but he doesn't.
Once this year, because my son has just turned 9, and he's all of a sudden got an interest in it. And, you know, and he's like, oh, dad, and so he did it for him, you know, more than anything. But for himself, he hasn't been able to do it in years now, 3 years now. But I'm hoping that now my son, our 9-year-old's into it, he will start doing it for him, because our 9-year-old saved up pocket money and he quite a lot, and he managed to go buy himself a fishing bag and a fishing net, and
nice.
He's got this stuff. So now and that's something I'm trying to encourage to happen, because he's got all that. Then dad has to take him, because I can't I can't do it with him. So so if he's or dad, can you take me fishing? Then he'll do it for him. He wouldn't do it for himself, but you do it for him.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, anything he had an interest in, or a hobby, or anything, you know, pastimes, he'd given up. Yeah.
Right.
You can't read or in books. I read books. Yeah, that's what I like doing, the pastime. But he can't, because he's quite he's uneducated. You know, he's not stupid. But over the years, I've taught him a lot, spelling and. It's a lack of education, let's just say it like that. So he's not able to read a book, you know. So listening to music is the only thing he really does do in the house, apart from watch TV.
Yeah, he only really listens to music and watches TV now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in terms of things like socialising, managing money, things like that.
I don't know.
You've mentioned before about him, his struggle to leave the house and things like that. So mm-hmm. I'd imagine he does struggle to socialise. And just what sort of things could you tell me about that?
He doesn't socialise at all. Like I say, that man that he's talking to right now, he's 75-year-old, he's our next door neighbour. And they you'll have a conversation with him every couple of days, because they're both out doing the garden. So that's as far as he'll go with talking to anyone out with the family. He does have a friend who he played in the bands with over the years, and they've what we say was his best friend. But they've been over the last few years, it's just been mainly phone calls. But we'll check in with each other by text message every few days, but and maybe phone once a week. But hasn't seen each other his friend might come and visit maybe once every couple of months, but he won't go to his house. He'll have a friend will come here, you know.
Yeah.
And so socialising, no, that's not something that he does. Managing money, at that time, I became his appointee, because he was incapable of budgeting and managing money. If he had money, he would go and spend it without thinking, and he would spend it on other people and try and buy people. You know, he flashed, you know what I mean, bought people things and, you know, calling them. Wait, 2 seconds, sorry. Oh, wait, don't do it. I'll be soon in a minute.
If you want to take a break at all, Michelle,
No, it's just because he just came back in the house there, so he just came in the room, so he wasn't aware of still on the phone.
Oh, right.
But he does have a bank card and a joint bank account that we have. However, bills and things like that, I take care of everything like that. And then this time last year, I fell really poorly. I ended up in a coma. I caught pneumonia. I ended up in a coma, life support. For 11 days, and that's when Colin realised just how much he can't do when it comes to managing the house and things like that. He had to go into the. Whilst I was in the coma, you know, they didn't. If it got to a point where they didn't know that I would, you know, wake up again, and he had to go into the bank, and he'd be like, I can't, you know, this situation, and they were, because he didn't have a clue what bills I paid, when they were due, what money we had, when it came in. He doesn't know, he wasn't aware of any of that.
Yeah.
I take care of all of that. If he needs anything or wants anything, he just tells me, and I'll buy it for him, or he'll, he does have his own wallet now, with a bank card in it, you know, for emergencies, and he'll always have some cash in his wallet, you know.
Yeah.
Just in case, like, you know, just in case. Like, for him, he would buy me something for my birthday without asking me for money, that, you know. But in terms of everything else financially, I take care of that.
Right. Okay, so the next question is, are there any particular places, dates, or people, or smells that trigger Colin at all? It can be even things like a sound,
mm-hmm.
or any situations that trigger a strong reaction in Colin.
Yeah, the triggers all the time. The smells and things like that, that's something that I don't normally... I can't predict, but like there's a lot of triggers on TVs, you know, like if you're watching like adverts that might come on, or like that part in a movie or that,
yeah.
and I'll just turn it over quickly,
yeah.
things like that. There's been many places, you know, maybe in the hospital or something like that, you know, that smell, and you know, he'll say, oh, I don't like that. There's certain foods, he's always told me that he hated plum tomatoes, and I didn't understand why. And I used to buy them and put them in the spaghetti bolognese, and
yeah.
it was such a massive thing to him. And I was like, "What?" And he's like, and then he's admitted to me that he has a memory of like being in residential care and something to do with plum tomatoes, and you know, and it's quite
yeah.
traumatic. He doesn't remember the actual event, but it was very traumatic. The plum tomatoes or something, you know, like so certain foods, smells, what else? Of places, like I say, we've moved out in Venice City, out into the country. We're not far away, we're only about 10 miles away, so, but we go into Venice City a lot because my parents live there, and that's where I go to the shops, that's where I go to the chemist, but like I say, you can see from the car, but we pass so many different places where, you know, where he lives in different foster placements, you might pass, you know, social work building and things like that, or, a flat where, you know, he'd been taken to and been abused and things like that, you know. And it might not, like, you know, we're not directly beyond that road, but you can see them from, you know, in passing and things like that.
Yeah.
So we'll change that, you know, over the years we've tried to adapt to that and try and avoid going, you know, well, let's not go that way, let's go, even if it's a bit longer, well, it's worth it. Because,
yeah.
you know, the way it makes them feel, like, they can go from being, like, feeling in a great mood and really happy and talking away to... And that's what I'm saying, I didn't understand all this. It's something I've learned over the years. You know, oh, and then later on that night, it's because I've seen, and he'll tell me what you've seen and what happened to that place, you know, sleeping out, you know, overnight, like freezing cold, you know what I mean, nothing to eat, starving, that, because he's hiding, because he ran away from the home and the police were linked from that. And I'd be like, oh, well, so now, like, if we're going somewhere and I know that that's on our route, I'll go, oh, I need to go touch it, and I'll, you know, and take him a different way and things like that. So I'm able to do things like that now.
Yeah.
But he does say to me there's lots of smells and...
lots of different triggers.
Triggered, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, not a problem. So what exactly happens to Colin when he, say, you've drove past something that's triggered him, or he becomes distressed? What sort of
shut himself off from myself and the children? He won't talk.
Yeah.
He'll just be really quiet. He'll, like I say, it's like, you know, he's there, but he's mentally not. He's not with us anymore. He's just existing. If it gets that bad, where, you know, I say to him that, like I'm saying, adult children, you know, they're aware of it, but like my younger son, you know, like he doesn't understand. So like that's when he'll
yeah.
move himself and go to the bedroom, we'll just pretend that's not well. But if he's not in the house, like, I mean, like he's just so detached, and he won't speak. I can talk to him and have to repeat myself 3-4 times and raise my voice until just to get his attention, you know, because he's like he's gone back to you know, whatever memory for that the trigger.
Yeah.
His head is he's not living in the now. He's not living in the present. He's living in his memories and in the past.
Yeah.
And he finds it hard to come back out of that, you know. And then he'll say, you know, you deserve better than me, you know. And I'm just, you know.
Yeah.
And then that's what I mean. Then you feel guilty for being like that because, you know.
Yeah.
He won't eat, that's another thing. When he goes that way, his appetite goes, he won't eat. Even if I make food, his dinner for him, he won't eat it. He'll sit with his jacket and his shoes on in the house. Even when we go to bed, he'll sit on top of the bed with his jacket on. It's that fight or flight sort of feeling, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't feel comfortable enough to take it off because, you know, it's that thing that's instilled in him that you might need to run out that, you know, jump out the window and run away, you know. It's...
Yeah, of course. So that's the day-to-day impact completed now. Next is going to be the impact on relationships and family life section. So the first question in this section is, how has the claimant's trauma affected your relationship with them? So how has Colin's abuse that he suffered in care, how would you say that that's affected yours
like our marriage.
Relationship? Yeah, well, not just your marriage. It can be from the start as well. You know, things that it affected when you were first starting to date,
yeah.
Or things that it still affects now.
That has changed, obviously. So after I kind of go in the beginning, there was a lot of trust issues, jealousy, a lot of jealousy,
yeah.
A lot of insecurity, mistrust, thinking, accusing me of things that. With no substance, you know. And then over time, then trusting me that I did love him, and that thinking that then he got to a point where he's like, I could just stay with him till our children grew up. And then I would leave him, sort of thing. Like it's like he's always thinking I'm waiting for the time that, you know. It's like there's always something else, you know. It's like, oh, you're waiting for that, and then you're gonna leave. You're waiting for that, and then you're gonna leave me, and you know. And then once he opened up and told me, then there was the fear that I had that power over him, and I could, if we ever did flap. Then I could tell people, you know, and so it kind of brought back a lot of issues with trust, because it wasn't trusting me in that I was being faithful to him. It was trusting me with his secrets, all his deep dark secrets that nobody else knew, you know. Then the insecurity of how I looked at him. You know, did it change how I looked at him as a man, you know, because, you know, once he dropped that act in that front, then I got to know the real him. Maybe I didn't love the real him, you know, but it was complete opposite. It made me love him more, you know.
So yeah.
I explained that to him, you know, because now I understand there's reasons for all his behaviours. It wasn't just his personality, you know, it's because of what he went through that's made him like that, you know.
Yeah.
So that's it's affected our relationship like that. What else? He's always, I've said before that he always correlated sex, having sex with being loved, you know.
Yeah.
So for it's there was always like he that was something that he needed, and if he got that you know then he it would kind of make him feel a bit better, you know.
Yeah.
However, you know, that can't always be the way, and it's trying to teach him that doesn't mean I don't love him anymore, you know, and things like that. Is there anything else? What else did you ask? I'm trying to think what else you asked there.
So I'm just writing up the notes
mm-hmm.
that you said about him in terms of the love and him always. So he'd always reference love with sex.
Yeah, he needed. Yeah, we always had a very, like regular sex life. And if that wasn't possible, then he would then think that it was. If we weren't having sex, then it means that I was falling out of love with him. I don't want to be with him anymore, you know?
Yeah. Okay, do you feel confident we've covered everything in that section? I know you wanted to, you were jogging your brain to see if there was anything.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. It was just to do with the anger, the anger that he's never been angry towards me. He's been aggressive in front of me, like he's thrown things about and that, and he's lashed out, you know. But he's never been physically violent with me. That's subsided over the years as he's, you know, as I've proven to him, you know, the love from, you know, I mean, like, married for a long time. He's the father of my four children, you know. As I'm saying, so it's like he kind of bottles the anger up now, maybe, but it's kind of, you know what I mean, inside, because he knows it. He shouldn't be angry at me because I'm not the person, you know. So there's no one to take it out on kind of anymore, you know. And so I think that's why he just switches off and he goes quiet. And sometimes it's difficult because you're like, I'm a very positive person, and I'm naturally positive, obviously, you know. And
yeah.
So as I try and like motivate him or encourage him in a positive way, when that trauma is like consuming him, a lot of the time he takes what I'm saying wrong, and he'll take it as a dig and an insult or a criticism towards him, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll have to keep reassuring him that, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you're doing anything wrong or you're bad, but I'm trying to help you. And it's maybe I'm too close. I've said that to him, you know. And there is still times where I have to say, you know, I wasn't there. It's not me that's done this to you, you know. But don't, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to help you, you know. And I think because I never, ever went through anything like that in my life. I had a great childhood, you know. Still really, really close to my mum and dad. I've got siblings and lots of cousins. I had the opposite. And he'll admit even to this day that sometimes that he can't help it. He's jealous of that. He's jealous that I have another extended family that he hasn't got. You know, we shared our children, we shared our grandchildren, but then I have this whole other massive family, extended family that he hasn't got. You know, and that makes him jealous, and he'll admit that to me. You know. Like he feels I don't understand, because how could I understand, because I've always had the opposite, you know.
Yeah.
But I've tried to say to him that I might not. I've never personally experienced it, but I've personally witnessed the result of it.
Yeah.
I've lived with the last 30 years, but the result of what a childhood like, that does to a person. Do you want me to talk about the relationship with the children and stuff? Or?
I believe, yes, it's going to be not the next question, the question
okay.
after that.
Okay, yes, so not now.
We'll get on to that, don't worry. So the next one is, has Colin ever become emotionally distant, angry, fearful, or difficult to reassure? I think you did just push
him. I
haven't
seen
that
yet.
Yeah,
absolutely. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what I say. It's, you know, and then he'll think, that's what I'm saying, he'll take it like as criticism. Even though, and I say this to him, I say what I'm saying, like, by the time it comes out my mouth and gets in your ears, like, it's completely reversed because of his reaction. You know?
Yeah, of course. It's things that you would feel like would benefit yourself, but obviously
it doesn't help him. It doesn't make him feel any better. It doesn't, you know. And then I'll get a lot of, you don't understand. You've had the perfect life. You've got your mum. You know, you've always had. You know, I get that from him. You know.
So now it's the question about the children. So the question's just, how has this affected the children or relatives or even other people living in the household at all?
Okay, can I just quickly take a drink? Is that a moment?
Yeah, not a problem at all, Michelle. Not a problem at all.
Those relationships were... he's got a good relationship with my mum and dad. Because, I mean, my mum and dad have always accepted him because they knew how much I wanted to be with him, you know, and they've kind of had to, you know, have some bit of information for them to answer.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, sorry, one moment.
Yep, no problem.
Come on, we're going to do different questions. Obviously not. knows Colin, you know, was brought up in care, and they'd been aware of the difficulties of his relationship with his mum, and Colin's yearning to fix that relationship. So, so they knew why he had a lot of, you know, issues and depression, anxiety, and things like that. So, and so if they come out the house and come shut himself away, they wouldn't know, you know, Colin just need, you know, and they, so they, you know, that they've been really good and understanding. So that's been fine. As in our own children, he's a great dad. They love him to bits. However, they're more like myself when it comes to how they love life and perceive life and how they, you know, feel about the, you know, what's important, because they've never obviously endured anything bad in their lives, you know. So as they've got older, like the adult children, you know, they know dad was brought up in care, they know that, you know, dad went, you know, got through quite a lot of abuse and that. And so when they say, why is he being like that, you know, and I say, mental health, you know. And like I said, like my son now, you know, about the hygiene thing, you know, like, why, mum? And I'm like, it's the mental health, Colin. It's, he can't motivate himself to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And our 19-year-old daughter, she's very close with dad, so she's my daddy's girl. But they struggle with understanding how having them and having the life he has now and the family he has now doesn't fix all that, because like they always say, yeah, yeah, that happened. Yeah, we know he went to all that. But look, he's got you and he's got us now, you know, because they've never experienced it themselves. So they struggle sometimes to understand why, you know, he still has problems, you know.
Yeah.
Because that was his past, but that, you know, it's not like that anymore. And then, but he hides it from, like when they were younger, you know, it was something we hid from them. You know, like I'm saying, our 9-year-old son, it's quite a good thing though, because like Colin's feeling down, things like that, and he comes in the room, Colin, look, there's Gordon, and he will, you know, Gordon can, like, he's quite boisterous and, you know, like a bit of a joke, he'll jump all over his dad and that can help Colin, you know, come out of that, you know. But then that's what I'm saying, when he knows he's in a place where he's not able to even do that for him, that's when he'll shut himself away.
Yeah.
Our granddaughter, we've got kinship care of her, and it's, I think he, like, I have to explain it. We've got an 8-year-old granddaughter, a 5-year-old granddaughter, and a 2-year-old grandson. And he isn't, like, comfortable, but physically close sometimes. In a way, like, he wouldn't change the girls' nappies when they were younger. He didn't think maybe it was appropriate, like, for him to change their nappies. Or, like, if the 2 or 3-year-old didn't have pants on them, put pants on them that night, because it's their guys, because it's his granddaughters, you know, it's like, but even further, where to me, they, you know, they're young, it's his family. Somebody else walked in the house immediately, that you know, I would have changed them. When I spoke about our 3-year-old granddaughter coming for a sleepover, the house was quite crowded. We were quite limited by everyone to sleep. And I suggested, you know, they sleep in bed with us, and saying that he wouldn't be comfortable for it to sleep in bed with us. And I don't, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like he thinks it's not appropriate. It's not correct. Where he, you know, was to me, you know, that he's her grandpa. You know?
Yeah.
Her grandpa, you know. And I think that, that affects his relationship to his children and his grandchildren. And I've seen there was a couple of occasions with our own children growing up where he needed me to tell him if it was okay for it. And, like, I'm saying, like, their daughter sitting on his neck, is that, you know? Or I've had to tell him to stop giving our son a ride for, like, grabbing his bum. And putting some things like just being silly them, because that's my son just being boisterous.
It's not
being rude, it's not being inappropriate, you know, like you're his father, and I don't, you know, it's just not for him, he's not even questioning doing it. So, you know, it's like, so he struggled with that. He so sometimes when he's alone feels that he's a bad father, he's not a good enough father for them, that they love me and need me more than they need him. That we'd all be better off actually if he wasn't here, because I give them everything they need. He's actually more of a hindrance. That's how he feels. That, you know, and sometimes I can get upsetting for the our older children, because they don't understand how, like, because they you know. They don't understand how they've not shown, because they've shown that they love him, you know, they show him love and affection all the time. Yet why does he still question it? They struggle to understand that, you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And I have to try and say to them, you know, it's not us, it's not anything that's happening now, it's what happened before us that's made him still be like that, you know. And they're like, but, you know, it's been a long time, and I'm like, because they just don't get it, you know.
Yeah.
So it sometimes does affect the relationship with kids, you know. Like I'll say, why, you know, the children don't come and sit in the room with me, and I'll be like, you know, well, that's because sometimes they'll come in and they'll see dad sitting there staring at the wall, you know.
Yeah.
And so they're a wee bit uncomfortable because, you know, they're not equipped to deal with it, you know. They don't know how to behave around them sometimes. You know, so they just, you know, stay keep, they'll distance themselves from them, and then that'll make him feel like, even my kids don't want to be around me. But it's not, it's, they just don't know how to behave around him because, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes he can even be like jealous of my relationship with the children, and he'll admit that, you know.
Yeah.
He could see me or hear me having a long conversation with, like, any of the children, you know, and having a laugh together and joking together and that. And then he'd be like, but they're not like that with me, you know?
Yeah.
Or, and I'm, like, it's not because they don't want to be like that with him, it's because he's not in that frame of mind at the time, you
yeah.
know? It's like, I, you know, there's, you know, they just get, they find it easier to get along with me, you know, because I don't have all the struggles that Dad has, you know? I don't have the problems that Dad has. So
yeah.
they'll come to me for these things that they won't go to Dad with, you know? And then that'll make him think that, you know, they don't love him as much as they love me. It's not. It's just easier for them, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier for them to, you know, to interact with me and to talk to me.
Yeah, of course.
It's nothing to do with they love me more. It's nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, it hurts them to see their dad hurt. It hurts them to see their dad struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Do you feel confident we've covered the section of how it's affected the children?
I think so, yes. I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No problem. So the next section is the support you provide section. So in terms of support that you give Colin, some things like reassurance during periods of anxiety or distress, things like attending appointments. I know you mentioned before that you are his appointee. So it's just things like that, any sort of managing medication for him or supporting him after nightmares. So we'll just start off with the reassurance during periods of anxiety or distress. How do you...
Yeah, like I said, I'll try my best. But sometimes it can be difficult because he can take things wrong. And when I realise that, what, you know, I'm not helping,
yeah.
you know, that's when I'll say, okay, right, you know, maybe you should go through into the room and just watch telly, you know, take yourself away from, you know, the family, you know, and, you know, I don't want him to sit in the room in his own, away from anyone else, but when you know, I realise I can't help and I'm not making him any better, you
yeah.
know, but, you know, the day still has to go on and the family still needs to function, then, you know, I'll agree with him to remove himself, but sometimes he just needs a cuddle, you know.
Yeah.
He needs a cuddle. He needs to remind him regularly how much I love him,
yeah.
that how much his worth. You know, to remind him like of things the children say about him when he's not even in the room about you know and you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like reassurance. All the new reassurance. I'll attend all appointments with him. And that's mainly because, like, his anxiety and his panic, like, he go to appointments and, you know, he won't remember half the things he wants to say and then he won't process the information either.
Yeah.
Take things in correctly. Misread situations. He needs encouraged to eat. He needs encouraged to get out of bed. He's encouraged to go to bed at night.
Yeah.
He needs a lot of encouragement, a lot of it, a lot of comfort.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola's food. Even to a point I make his porridge every morning.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, he won't have breakfast.
Yeah.
That's what it's like. He won't provide for himself.
Yeah.
So I cook all his meals for him. I wash all his clothes. If he's not, taking care of himself properly, I'll pull out clothing, iron it, and have it sat out for him. Encourage him, so I take care of basically everything,
Yeah. In terms of managing any sort of medication or practical responsibilities, do you give him all his medication yourself?
Yeah, well, I organise it. I order it and sort out with the chemist and things like that. It's different now. Before, you had to do mostly all yourself, but now the chemists are quite good at ordering and medicine and things like that. But he's reminded that, when he's, I don't drive, but I have a driver's license. I can drive, but I don't have a license. And this is another thing as well. So, I'll say, come on, you need to drive me to chemist to pick your medicine up and things like that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want me to get my driving license. And this is a thing that I've not done. And the reason I've not done it is because he's got an insecurity that if I have a driver's license, then I won't need him for anything. Like I said, because I take care of so much stuff, that the one thing that everybody needs to offer is drive. If Emma's got to go anywhere, Dad has to drive, I said to him, last week, should I just have him get my license? And he's like, we don't need it. And it's a kind of comfort for him, I think, knowing that, that's one thing that only he can do. He will take me in the car to go and get the prescriptions and that. But yeah, 9 out of 10 times he'll sit in the car and I'll go in and get it and bring it out and that. Before I used to sort of offer him at home, but since last year, remember I said I took not well myself.
Yeah.
I've been in that hospital myself and I've gone through a lot of treatment and taken a lot of medication myself, so much so that I've just managed that. So he has taken on more responsibility of sorting out what tablets he's taking in the evening and what he's taking during the day. And sometimes I might just need to say, do you think you need to take a diazepam, if I can see him really struggling, he does take a little bit of responsibility, as in terms of he'll have a tub for daytime tablets and then he'll have his tub for his nighttime tablets. He's able to do that himself now. But in terms of ordering them, make sure the chemist has them in time, I take care of that. Phoning, booking appointments, changing appointment, I do all that.
So in terms of supporting Colin after he's had things like nightmares or flashbacks or becomes quite panicked after triggers, how do you support them in those instances?
Just depends on how bad it is. Ask him talk to him and ask him if he wants to tell me what it was, what the nightmare was, what it was about or who it was about. Sometimes he might tell me what he actually dreamt about. He might just tell me who it was about or what place it was about. And then he won't want to say any more than that, but that's enough sometimes. Try and encourage him to do something that will help distract him, Talk, make conversation with him. You know, that's completely different to what's in his head at that time. Sometimes, but then sometimes it just doesn't work because, like I say, it can be that bad, you know. I try and stay awake then sometimes. If he wakes up during the night and I wake up, I'll try and, you know, say to him, I'm awake too, you know, and talk to him, and, you know, if it's sitting on the telly and that. And, like, last night I woke up in the toilet at 3 a.m. and he was sitting up on the end of bed, and I went to talk him back down, he's still there. And I was like, you okay? And he's like, yep. And I'm like, why are you sitting up? And he's like, not for any reason at all. So I just, like, rub his back a few times, you know, and say, like, he's sitting on the telly and that, and then you come back into bed, you know, and, like, just catch him, you go, yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, and just catch him that way, you know. That's what I mean, like, if he has a nightmare that, you know, he'll get up out of the bed, you know, because he's too scared to go fall back asleep straight away.
Yeah. And in terms of encourage him to leave the house or socialise at all?
Well, the only time I can get the catch up in the house, if I need to go anywhere, then the only way I can get there is if he drives me. So, you know, but I can't encourage him to go out and do anything by himself. He won't want to go out and do anything by himself, you know. I try and encourage him, you know, to go fishing, which he, like I say, I think that's going to start becoming a thing now, but that's only because our son really used to be doing it for him. But in terms of socialising, it's like he's not got an interest in it whatsoever. He's not got an interest in anybody else, you know. Meeting people and having friends, and that's not because he'll never be able to trust other people, you know, friendships are something that he knows that he doesn't want. Like our neighbours, like I've seen him start talking to the neighbour, he'll stop and have conversations, be polite, and, you know, talk about day-to-day stuff because they're our neighbours, you know. He has no intention of like becoming friends with our neighbours and, like, you know, popping over for a coffee and a chat-jump and things like that. It's only like if they happen to be outside at the same time. Because he'll always question absolutely everybody's intentions and what they'll think of him and will they, you know, judge him. And he always tries to be, you know, put this, you know, it's like a disguise on when he speaks to everybody because he's frightened that they'll see the Colin with all the trauma, you know. He's like, he tries to, you know, so it's easier for him not to have friendships, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, you know, and he doesn't have to question if they're just his friend because they're like his wife. You know, that's the way he thinks. Because of that self worth, it's like, why would they want to be friends with him? And I'm trying, you know, because he has such a lack of self worth that he doesn't think people want are just interested in him. He always thinks they're interested in him because they're trying to be around me, myself. You know, that it's always been that way. You know, but that's just because he doesn't think anything about himself. You know, I'm just trying to reassure him. I say, well, think about, you know, me. Like, you know, I love you. I want to live the rest of my life with you. Your children love you. We all will want to be around you all the time.
Yeah.
You know, don't think about what you think about yourself. Think about how we must look at you then, you know? And it's like I said, trying to say that to him, it's like he needs to learn to love himself because he'll never believe we love him if he doesn't love himself, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And so that's something he's trying to work on. He's got a referral coming up, you know, the community mental health team. And that's something, you know, I do believe that until he likes who he is as a person and realises everything he's went through had nothing to do with him as a person. It's not a reflection on him. It wasn't, you know, that he was, you know, and to look at himself through my eyes and the children's eyes, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think when we were growing up and that, like, you know, when people were next to him.
Yeah.
There was always an ulterior motive. You know, that there was always a price tag came with something, everything. So, and I think that's just carried on into adulthood. So when people are nice to him,
yeah,
you know, he always thinks there's some another reason for it, or, you know, so to protect himself from that, he just eventually over the years has reduced the amount of people that he had, you know, he comes into contact with.
Yeah, so it's like he thinks that people are just trying to use him. They don't.
Yeah.
Because
growing up, somebody was nice to him or showed him something, you know, an interest in him, you know, or, you know, then, and then later in line there was a consequence, or there was, you know, there was all premeditated behaviour, you know. So
yeah.
That's how he judges everybody, you know, because
growing
up, that's how everybody was, you know. It's quite sad, you know.
Yeah, of course. So in terms of monitoring Colin's safety, is just general safety and well-being, do you have to monitor him quite closely? Do you have to, you know, make sure that he's not, you know, trying to run away from the house or things like that?
Or if he's trying to harm
himself at all?
Not really. It's more emotionally. Like if he wouldn't run away from the house, like, like take the car keys away, take away his ability to get in the car, because when he's that way, we'd be better off without him, type, when he's like that. But because we're rural, I don't think he's going to get up and walk out the house. It's completely opposite. He doesn't want to leave the house, you know. His safety, because there's so many of us in the house, and his children and our granddaughters in the house, you know. It's like, I know, there's no chance of him doing anything that would cause a risk to his own safety because there's so many people around, you know what I mean?
So you say you would just always be monitoring his mental
health? Emotionally, monitoring, like, what he's watching on the you know, what he's listening to.
Yeah.
His behaviour, his facial expressions, and sometimes I can see it coming on, you know, if he's heard something on the telly, and I know that he's related to it personally, and then I can see the dip in starting to go down, you know, and I can watch him like that, and then I can try get in there early, you know, and try and stop it. But then other times it's just too bad, and no, I can't.
Yeah. Apologies for the silence, Miss Al.
I'm coming in to get a drink of my tea. No,
no worries. I know a lot of these questions can also feel quite repetitive, like you've covered them beforehand. It's just going into depth with each one. Yeah. So, how often is this support required? So, you know, you have to monitor him. And you mentioned
Throughout the night, like I said, last night, even throughout the night, every day, constantly. The only time I'm away from Colin is when I'm in hospital myself. Like I say, it's been quite a lot over the last 12 months. But when I do that, my 19-year-old daughter takes over kind of like the motherly role in the house, you know, and my son will make sure that he spends more time with his dad and stuff like that. So they, you know, they kind of, you know, take on more responsibility. You know, that, like round and caring for him when I'm unable to. But that's only when I'm in hospital.
Yeah, no, that's good. So the next question is, have there been any occasions with Colin when you were concerned that he might harm himself or misuse substances or be unable to keep themselves safe at all?
Not now. No, I'm saying now he's at a place where he when it comes to hurting himself, things like that, he knows it's not just himself who he's hurting.
Yeah.
It's having an impact on his children and myself. So I know that he wouldn't do that because, you know, he doesn't do it for us rather than not do it for himself. So I don't worry about that. Previously in the past, but he's like maybe driven away. Like he had a motorbike at one point, and we were together for 8 years before we got married, and when he asked me to marry him, I said, if you get rid of the motorbike, and the reason I wanted to get rid of the motorbike was because I thought it could have been a tool for him to hurt himself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he did, he sold the motorbike and we got married.
That's nice.
Sometimes I might see like a mark on his hands or arms, that, and I'll question how it happened to him, you know. And if he doesn't want to speak about it, he'll just look at me and give me that look. And so, but it's not anything bad, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that he could probably done it to himself, you know.
Yeah.
Like punch him, you know. But he won't do it. I'm saying he never does it where anybody can hear him or see him do it. But sometimes I can see the bruising and that. And I'll go, in his hands, and I'll say he's done that, you know, or he's his head off the wall, like when, you know. And so he might have a lump in his head and say, you've done that to yourself, and he doesn't need to speak, you know, and I know he had, you know. And it's just because things have got that much for him, the only release he can get is to, like, cause himself pain, you know. Because he can't show anger and things like that in front of me and the children anymore because he knows that's wrong.
Yeah, but he does. He understands the impact.
Yeah, he knows that it's wrong now, yeah.
Yeah. So the next question is kind of brushing over what we've just talked about, but it's the wider impact section.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, has Colin's past affected their education, employment, finances, housing, or ability to maintain friendships? So this is obviously the present day. Has it affected the abuse? Has it affected Colin's education? I know, of course, it just might feel a bit repetitive. I know.
Remember I was saying before, like, his lack of an education.
Yeah.
In the beginning was so apparent to me. I'm quite well educated, and quite good employments from, you know, in the early days and that. And that he always made him worry because he always thought that I would meet somebody who's better off than him and better job than him and like give him a bit less than him. So that was a big fear of his. But he struggled. He struggled with forms and things. So, but over the years, like he's learned to spell so much. Like just with this is myself, you know, or in like arithmetic and working things out, and he'll be like, yeah, but how do you, and I explain things to him, and he'll be like, oh, and he picks up so quickly, and I've said to him, I don't know how many times, had a good, like, consistent education, you know, you'd actually be a very intelligent person. It's not that he's not capable of being intelligent, it's just the lack of education, you know, his handwriting, you know, like, I mean, he doesn't like doing written things, like, I'll do anything written, like, you'll get me to do it on his behalf, you know. What else? He does feel out of his depth in many ways, even like, many, because he feels that he's not equipped, in an intellect level, you know.
Yeah, of course. So, in terms of employment, has Colin ever had a job at all,
Oh,
or
yeah.
he has, yes.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. In the early days, like, he did a lot of, there was manual work, you know, like labouring work and things.
Yeah.
Worked for construction companies and stuff. And I was civil servant in the DWP, you know. So we both worked. We both had good jobs, you know. But it was all manual work.
Yeah, would you say that the abuse that he suffered would affect, you know, his ability to turn up to work?
Yeah.
Could affect him, obviously, if he's triggered during work. So how would you say that it's affected him in working
yeah,
those
he
days?
Went through a lot of different jobs. He wouldn't last the jobs. He would get quite confrontational with management and things like that.
Yeah.
Because he was quite, people could take him as a quite aggressive person, but because he didn't have the tools to express himself correctly, you know, so he
yeah.
would get quite frustrated, and that so it would affect his employment and things, you know. That's why he got into drumming quite regularly, because drumming is something he did well, and he did it was easy for him, you know, and that was only form of income. But then he was doing some labouring work, and he had an accident at work, and he wasn't able to work then after that. So,
So was that a back injury or?
Yeah, spinal surgery.
Right.
So he was no longer able to do any manual work. So then I gave up work to stay at home and care for him, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why we're both at home now. That's why we went on and had our last child, who's 9, because we were both at home and we thought, oh, let's have another kid.
Oh, bless.
And then the other ones are all grown up, you know, so I say grown up.
Yeah. So was that the last job that Colin's worked, where he's had the injury to his spine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the last one. Mm-hmm. That labourer. Mm-hmm.
How long ago was that about?
About 16 years ago or something.
16 years. It doesn't have to be exact. It's just
yeah,
approximately.
16.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really, even like, not so much nowadays, but back then there was a lot, you know, even like jobs like that, there were still clerical sites like timesheets, you'd have to fill in timesheets and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Or even like when you got jobs, you know, you'd have to fill in like, you know, health declaration forms and things like that, you know, just for the files and that, you know, that's something
yeah.
that, you know, he would get me to do on his behalf, because he wasn't able to, you know, fill out even forms like that, so.
Yeah. Ever avoided any sort of opportunities or activities because of fear, low confidence, or poor mental health, would you say?
Opportunities?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, but, like, recently he's had, like, 2 or 3 offers of joining bands as a drummer, local bands.
Yeah.
And a couple of them have been really, really like, years ago he would have been ecstatic to do, you know, big festivals and, you know, and the music he loves, and he's spoken back and forth with the person, you know, like via, you know, message, and then when it comes to going to meet up with them and, you know, do a band practice, he won't go.
Yeah.
You know, he just won't go. But he wants to, he'll converse back and forth with people and make plans to do it, but then he'll not go.
Yeah.
You know?
If when the day comes, the anxiety starts to swell.
Yeah, and he just won't commit himself to it. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
question is just, has Colin required any sort of medication, counselling, therapy or other support at all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said in the beginning, there was the diazepam and then the temazepam.
Diazepam.
For anxiety and temazepam for the sleep disturbance.
Diazepam. Probably not getting the spelling on these right.
That's okay.
No, it's be amended. So diazepam, and was there another one that you said? Sorry.
Yeah, through the years. Well, the diazepam was for the anxiety, and then the temazepam was for sleep. And then throughout the years, he's also been put on a quetiapine. Q-U-E-T-A-P-I-N-E, quetiapine, and that's kind of like a mood stabilizer.
Right.
And then there's propanolol.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. There's propanolol. P-R-O-P-A-N-O-L.
Oh.
And that's like, that's for anxiety as well. You know, it's like a beta blocker.
Yeah.
And heart races and things to slow the heart down.
Right.
And then he's also had, like, we've been referred, he's had many a times he's, like, gone to, been referred for mental health, you know, and then waited a year and a half on the waiting list, got the appointment, like gone to the first appointment, and then he's not gone back. And that, you know, there's been several occasions, like example, because it would be a male. There was another time we went and it was a female, but she was younger than our daughter, so he wasn't comfortable talking to her. There was another time we went and the first assessment, the first appointment went well, and then we went the following week, that went not bad, and then we went the third week, it was a different psychiatrist, and they were like, oh, sorry, the other one's, and he's like, what? And it was like, you know, he wasn't, it was just not, you know, he needs that one person that he can build, like a contrast with, so
expect.
It's never ever worked properly.
Yeah.
Until recently, he was referred through the, he's under the care of the pain clinic for his, you know, his back issues, and the pain clinic have a mental health site, and they referred him to pain, mental health and pain management site, and he really connected with the lady, and she was great with him, absolutely fantastic. So he actually completed the course with her, and that was her that taught him like the techniques of, you know, when you start getting flashbacks and you start, you know, thinking of things in the past. You know, I want you to look for like five things red in the room. What does it smell like? Can you touch it? What does it feel like? You know, like use your senses. You try to teach him, you know, to do things like that. And time, yeah. So that was only at the time that was successful. However, he's recently been referred to community mental health teams. We're waiting for an appointment with that.
Right.
So to deal with like more of the PTSD sort of side of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he has been trying to seek mental health support going back the last 20 years, but it's never really worked for him for a multitude of reasons, of, like him not being at a place where he was able to be completely honest and trust. And like the worry of who do they know, and what if they go home and they say, oh, and tell my story to someone else, or what if they're like that themselves? What if they like that sort of thing? Because, you know, he's met so many people in his life who, on one side of them, they're, you know, is really professional, and then there's that dark side of them too, you know. So he questions, is anyone like that? So to go and speak to a professional and about that type of thing.
Yeah.
He needs to build her, you know, that up, and he's never managed to do that, you know, until recently.
Yeah, well, it does sound like, obviously, being changed about a lot, having a psychiatrist that's not the same every time, I think. It would play into it, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So you said recently he's been referred to a mental health. Is that a counselling or is it a therapy?
It's called community mental health team. I think they're psychiatry. Yeah, they're psychiatry.
Right.
It's to deal with, like, he's opened up to his doctor about MDBS, and his doctor wants him, you know, to try and get some sort of some sort of help with that, you know, because he's never really dealt with that. He's dealt with his his anxiety, but he's not explained why he's got anxiety. He's not explained why he's got sleep disturbance. He's gone in with it and tried to get his symptoms dealt with, but he's never opened up and really spoke about the cause of these, you know, symptoms. And the doctor's thinking that if he needs to deal with the causes, and until he deals with the causes, symptoms aren't really going to go away. No tablet's going to take it away, you know?
Yeah, of course.
No, mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the wider impact section completed.
Okay.
Now, the next section is impact on you. So it'd be how it's affected you overall. How has living and supporting with Colin affected you emotionally, physically, or financially?
Okay, bear with me. I'm sorry, I'm just getting a drink. Well, in the beginning, I found it difficult because I didn't understand, because why did, I'd never met anybody who had gone through what he'd gone through. So, and I was such a very trusting person.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, and all the other people I'd relationships with were very trustworthy people. And so when I met Colin, I just thought that he was seeing me for who I was and how honest I was and that, but he didn't. And that was very difficult. I had to change and adapt a lot of things I did and the way I did them. Not because of any other reason than he took them the wrong way. And I know, so, and then I've gone through moments of frustration where I get frustrated because I think he's got myself for 30 years and he's got our four children and now he's got a grandchildren. We've got a lovely house and a beautiful place, you know, and sometimes that is all, and he's oblivious to all that, you know. And sometimes it's difficult for me because I don't understand how, you know, because, you know, but I do believe him because I see the suffering, you know, I see it in him. It's not an act, it's not something he puts on, it's not something he exaggerates. He hates being like that, you know. It's been difficult for me because, like I say, I think because I'm so close, you take out things on the ones closest to you. And because I'm the only one that he opened up to, and he hides it from everyone else, he would be a different person than anyone else, you know. He would, you know, and change how he was. But then, so I always kind of felt that was unfair, you know. That, and I always kind of felt that, I felt quite a lot of anger towards people that done this to him.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always wished that, then they would have consequences for doing that to him. But to be honest with you, the best way to get, but I say this to him, the best way just is to stop, you know, to stop letting them do it, you know what I mean? To take that power away from them and get better, you know? I've had to change how I act, how I behave. I've always been a very friendly person, an overly friendly person, even with females and males, and then, you know, there doesn't mean any difference if I'm talking to a male or a female, but I'm not as friendly with males anymore because it's caused difficulties with me and Colin. And Colin said, you don't know Michelle, what people really like, because you've had such a sheltered life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he'd be like, and I'm like, yeah, no, I was only talking. He'd be like, no, the amount of time you've been smoked, and I know that he's taking that the wrong way. And I'm like, I'm just being friendly. You know, so I've had to, because he has opened my eyes to a world that I had never experienced, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I have benefited in a way because I realised I was quite a naive person when I met him. Maybe too trusting, maybe, you know. There is a lot of bad people in the world that, so it's kind of like opened my eyes to that. Being I'm not a person going through it, I've had to change my personality because I've learned what he's gone through, and a lot of it's been hard to comprehend and understand. Like, how can people behave in such a way? How can people, like, be so malicious and carry on, that, you know, like, live in themselves? Like, it's hard to think that people exist in the world that are so cruel, you know?
Yeah.
It really, really is. And the level of what he's gone through and the amount of what he's gone through, it's just, it's so unbelievable.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why, and I say that to him. I say that, you know, he does struggle and he is in a bad way, but I still think most people would have been able to carry on, you know, after going through all that, you know.
No, yeah, it's
so I focus on
people.
Him. I focus on him more than I focus on, no, but it's a big part. I focus on the children first, but then I focus on him over myself. I do. And he's been more of a priority than myself over the years, because I wanted him to get better, so I kind of have put myself second to him over the years. So that's how it's affecting me.
How would you say that it's affected you physically or financially?
Well, financially we've always struggled because we've not had that regular income. But I've been lucky because I've had support. Like my mum and dad, I've always had them there to help me. Help us financially. So we've never ever, you know, had too much hardship. But then, Colin's not always been able to be the provider. So that again, it's had a knock-on effect on him.
Yeah.
Physically, it's been quite tiring because I do take on the role of, you know, everything. Like I said, like, you know, all the cooking and, you know, the housework and that. Even when the children were babies, I did all the, you know, the nursing, you know, the night feeds, the baby changing, the baby bath. I did it all myself, you know. Because I loved it.
Absolutely.
I loved it. And so I kind of did a lot single-handed, yeah. So physically it's been quite tiring, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But if he gets better at the end of the day, then it'll be worth it, and that's what I say, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not that it's better, but if he learns to live with it easier.
Yeah, it's just finding that peace, isn't it?
Yeah, and I always say this to him, you know? Because he always say, oh, when, you know, when you leave, you just want me to go on that, and I'm like, Colin, I've been here for 30 years. See if, like, we don't come out to the end of this, like, I will be, like, such an angry person, because, like, I've put a lot into this working as well, you know. This is what I'm saying, he doesn't see that, you know.
Yeah.
I want peace with him, you know. I want it so bad, because I've put so much into it as well, you know, committed, like, my whole adult life to him, you know. So whatever it takes, you know. If I was going to walk away, I would have walked away a long time ago, hooped in that gym, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not been easy. Like, I don't have, like, fresh friends. I don't, like, socialise myself. Things like that. It's just my family, my children, Colin, my parents. That's my life. I do read and things, you know.
Yeah. So, in terms of, I think you brushed over it a little bit, there are a couple of things in this, but have you experienced any sort of worry, stress, exhaustion, disturbed sleep, isolation, or difficulties in your own relationships or employment? I think obviously it doesn't have to be the relationships part, it's just obviously with you and Colin.
I found it difficult being able to go to work and come home from work and Colin not question, like, not worry about who I came into contact with whilst I was at work, you know, was it, you know, because I'm maybe being surrounded with people who, you know, were doing better career wise than him, you know, it kind of, that's what I'm saying, he always felt that he, you know, he wasn't good enough, you know, his lack of education, that, yeah, I was in positions of employment where, you know, quite well educated people who, you know, done well, you know, career wise, and that made him feel threatened, and I was aware of that, you know. But even like, I don't know what else there was a bit of isolation there. I've always wanted him to believe me, but all I want in life is my family, him and my children. Like, that's all I want in life. And if I have to just show him that by just dedicating myself to him, then that's what, you know, I will do. But for that, yeah, there has been sacrifices in terms of career and friends, and you know, and going play, like, to family events and things, you know, because, you know, if it's going to be benefit, if it's going to have a positive outcome at the end of the day, then it'll be worth it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you mentioned before about obviously being very tired after doing all of the cooking, all the cleaning, things like that. Mm-hmm. Have you had any sort of like exhaustion? Have you had any disturbed sleep at all? Like, have you had to be on any sort of medication for the exhaustion that you've had or stress that you've had?
No, I've always kept really, really physically well all my life until, like I said, it fell on last year. So I've been really poorly, but that's because of the infection that's caused that, you know. And then, so the roles have kind of switched over last year, you know, problems looked after me and been the one caring for me a lot more, you know, over the last year. And that, during those periods of time, you know, where he's had to take over and he's had to, you know, be in control, you know, and because he's, you know, without even thinking about it, that it gives him a feeling of self-worth, like, you know, because he's done something, and he's, you know, and he's had a productive day, and it, the change, what that does to how he feels is you can see the difference in him. It's like, you know, so when he's feeling down and he's, you know, he's got hand flashbacks and that, and he's just sitting there stewing.
It's just
exaggerating all those negative feelings about himself, you know, his lack of self-worth. But when I've not been well over last year, and he's had to, like, kind of look after me, you know, and put me first, and I'm back and forth to the hospital and see the kids and make sure the kids are ready for school and answer the phone, you know, because you know, somebody else there answer, and he's had to take on all this stuff, you know, and it's kind of, you know, so.
And would you say that he thrived in that situation?
Yeah.
Like, he thrives off the responsibility if you give it to him,
absolutely. But up until then, I slept brilliantly, but my sleep's been a wee bit disturbed over last year, but that's just a lot to do with my own health and the trauma that I went through myself. So I wake up quite a lot during the night, but like I said, like, when I wake up and Colin's awake, you know, I won't go straight back to sleep, you know, and I'll talk to him, I'll put the telly on again and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
I did find it difficult when the kids were, like, babies, because I was up through the night with them all night. And then the other children had to be up through the day with them, you know. But that was quite exhausting, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, what has been the most difficult part of supporting the claimant? Or supporting Colin, of course, sorry.
The most difficult part?
Yeah.
Probably,
no, it is quite a hard question.
It is quite a hard question.
You can take as much time as you need.
Like, probably maybe I used to always think that if he knew that I was committed to him, and once he had a bond with his children and they had our own family, once we built our own family, that would make everything better. Because I was quite naive, that's what I'm saying. So that's probably the hardest part, realising that that's not, and that won't fix it. You know, that won't fix it. That's kind of the reward at the end of it for him, you know. But for
me, that's
probably the hardest thing. That's what I mean, realising that, you know, that he doesn't need the professionals to work with him, because he needs to process everything that happened. And he needs closure, so he can start to move on and start to enjoy what he's got. Because, you know, it's quite frustrating that he's not enjoying what he's got, because, you know, when he's in good mood and he's good form, he sees it, you know, and he's like, why can't I feel like this every day? Look what I've got, you know, and you know. So that's probably the most difficult part, realizing that he needs that's not enough for him, you know. He needs some professionals, because I don't have the answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do, you know.
Yeah, I know, of course. So I just put realizing that I would not be able to help in every scenario.
Witnessing the impact and the suffering that still to this day that he experiences from people from so long ago, you know. That's very hard for me to witness and see that in him.
Yeah, of course.
It's like it just happened to him, you know. Now, you know, it's that real to him, you know.
Yeah.
And he's missing out on so much in life, you know. So much happens in life. It's hard, you know. It's stopping him enjoying life, you know. It's like sometimes he's just existing, you know. He's not living, he's just existing. And he's such a good person as well, such a lovely man. Like, you would think that somebody who'd been around all that would end up, you know, have traits like that himself, and he's not. He's such a good soul that's what's most upsetting, you know, like.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you there.
He's such a lovely soul, you know, soul. And like,
to me, just off record, of course, to me, that the survivors of abuse are some of the realest people that you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like, because I'm saying that he keeps it in because he doesn't want himself and the children suffering because of it, you know. But I see him. I see the torment he goes through, you know. And it's not fair. He doesn't deserve it. He does not deserve it. Huh? Like, see, he's a horrible person and angry, and he's like, not horrible to me. That would be easier for them. You know what I mean? Because he, you know, but it's not. You know, it's so unfair. Like, that's the hardest part. It's really unfair.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are coming to the end now. This is the last section of the statement. I do apologise for the time that's taken. Obviously, the more time we take on it, the more details you get down, the better, of course, for redress to understand.
Absolutely.
So, the last section is the overall impact. Mm-hmm. So just in a few words, just in a brief summary, how would you describe the effect that the historical abuse continues to have on Colin's life?
Basically, just what I've seen like a minute ago is stopping him enjoying life.
Yeah.
It's stopping him, enjoying life. It's stopping him being able to get pleasure out of anything. It's preventing him, like I said, he's just existing some days. He just exists.
Yeah, so I've just put it, stopping him enjoying life, mm-hmm. stopping him to get pleasure from anything.
And he doesn't feel the love that's around him.
Yeah.
And there's so much, and I say this to him, there's so much love around him, me and the children, the way we feel about him, the way we adore him. Right? And he doesn't feel it sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like what he went through has made him, has stopped him being able to accept life, love from people, you know, and he's got it here, you know, and that upset that, you know, that's what, like, probably one of the main things, you know.
Yeah.
The thing that he's always wanted all his life, to be accepted and loved, he's got, but there's something stopping him feeling it, you know.
Yeah. What do you believe that Colin's life may have been like had the abuse not happened?
Oh, God, I've said this to him, you know, intellectually, socially, emotionally, You know, like, you know, it's completely different because who he is as a person, you know, that's what I was trying to say, you know. Like, he's still such a lovely, genuine, caring, compassionate. He would do anything for anybody, yeah? And then he would give you the shirt of his back. For him to still be like that after going through it and witnessing everything he has in life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can only imagine, you know, but how, you know, how his life would be had he not gone through that, you know?
Yeah.
All those bodies right there.
Absolutely.
Like, he would have a better relationship with the kids in that job, because sometimes, like, when he looks at the kids, it makes him think of it when he was a kid. Like, our 9-year-old son has this spitting image of him, like, looks so like him. So when he, like, last 9 years, as he's grown up, he's looked at him and gone, when I was that age, this is what I was going through. When I was that age, that's what happened to me, you know? And it's like a constant reminder, like, how could somebody do that? To, like, when he looks at, like, his son, he's like, how could somebody hurt somebody like that? You know, because it's like a reflection of himself when he was younger. So it's even made him, like, miss out on that brilliant relationship he could have with his son. He has a great relationship, but he could even be better. Because when he looks at him, he sees himself. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the last question now. Is there one particular incident or example that best demonstrates the lasting impact of the abuse?
What is an example of behavior?
It can be an example of, say, Colin, you know, not turning up to meet your family at times. It can be an example of, like you mentioned before, about him not being able to go and enjoy the things that he loves, like his drumming, things like that.
I think the most how difficult, even now after all this time, being part of a family is to him, like, how it's not natural to him. Like, it's not like he, it's like, you know, he still questions everything that he does between him and the children, and between me and him. He needs reassurance from me that, you know, what he classes is normal. Like, he said he wants, teach me what a normal family is. And I'm like, what? And he's like, because I don't know. Because I've not, you know, he's seen some fucked up stuff, you know. Everywhere he was in his childhood, to an extreme, sometimes it's hard to believe, and so he said, but even after 30 years of being together and creating a family together, it's still not natural to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's still not, I still have to, every now and again reassure him it's okay for, one of the children to, be touching you there, or be, you know, semi-nude in front of you, or climbing into bed beside you, and, you know what I mean? And, or, for my son, you know, son putting his head on my chest, the physical intimacy, he still needs to be sure that it's okay.
Yeah, of course.
So I think that's probably, that's how much of an impact it's had on him. It's made him question what's normal, and he's frightened that he might be perceived as being not normal, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not like that at all. He's just, you know, he's just scared, I think, that I might think he is, you know?
Yeah. So I've just put down for that last one, being part of a family is not natural to him. He still questions every interaction with his children because he does not know the normality of family life.
Of what's appropriate, yeah.
or what's appropriate. Oh yeah, so the times where he feels uncomfortable in front of his own children, when they are half naked.
I try to be physically intimate with them and sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And he's jealous, like, of the relationship, like, I have with the children, you know.
Yeah.
Because he sees that as getting on so well, and, you know, being, like, naturally, like, enjoying, you know, just behaving normal together, and you're playing with them, the kids, and having a laugh with my adult kids and that, you know, and it makes him jealous sometimes, because he doesn't feel a part of that, you know.
Yeah. So I'll just put that there. The times where he feels uncomfortable in front of his own children, when they are half naked, or try to be physically intimate with them, are clear examples of this. So yeah, that's come to the end of the supporting statement. Now, do you feel like we've covered?
Yeah, I think
everything?
So what happens next then?
So next, we've got your witness statements that Colin's done. We've got your supporting statement now. We're going to be going through all this, bundling it all together with a cover letter. You'll be sent a copy of these on an email or by post, whichever you prefer. We just obviously need you to read through these, make sure that you're happy with everything that's there. Make sure you take your time reading every single thing. If you want anything adding on, just please let us know before you sign it. If you're happy with the way it is, just sign it, put your name, the date, send it back to us, and then we will bundle that together and send it across the redress. Then after
redress, I said come yesterday, because obviously I've been looking at stuff online, and I said there's a thing called redress. And I said, and because I said to him, and it's not just like, you're not just claiming for compensation. I said, they say that, you know, that he even able to provide, like acknowledgement, an apology to you for going through that. And because some people, that's what helps them most, like the acknowledgement of it. Because, like, he's made comments to me, like, oh, if you ever get my files, you can read them, and then you'll see that it did happen. But what are you talking about, Colin? Believe you. It's like he still has that in him, like, does everyone believe, you know, am I believed? You know, and I was like, and so it is redress, right, okay.
Yeah, it's the Scottish redress scheme. So it's all of the survivors of historical abuse pre 2004. So it's the government obviously acknowledging the abuse that people went through at that time. So,
so, see, like, the records that you were able to get about his times in the residential care homes and things like that, and the periods of there, does Colin get a copy of that?
If you'd like one, of course.
Because
I
said to him before, I think the difficulty he has as well is, like, when he's opened up and told me everything, like, and then I asked follow-up questions, like, so how old were you when you were, because you'll tell me if I'm memory, and you'll go, I think, and you'll try and work out, like, how old he was at certain times. Like, until he has, like, kind of more of a chronological... Like, I can tell Colin everywhere to... My earliest memory is probably about 5. But I can tell him, like, where I live, from the age of 5 until I met him. What schools I went to from 5 until I met him. Where I went on holiday every year. Right? Where I did the rug off my... Like, he's got so many blanks, and I think he's making false memories up because he's not 100% sure.
It does, with abuse. You try and block out memories, and then the memories
and
do.
And
he'd
be like, I can't remember the first time he met his mom, and like, how old he was when he lived in this place and that place. So I think that would help him, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, it would.
But he would get a copy of that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want a copy of any sort of record that we get, either your GP records or your social care records, that's absolutely fine. If you can, just pop it on an email to us, just so it comes to our inbox, and we get a task for it. If you want to just pop it on an email, just ask. If you want GP records and social care records, just ask for them both, and we'll respond to the email as soon as possible.
That's brilliant. I'll do that. Okay,
yeah,
no problem.
How are you feeling after the statement today, Michelle?
I'm feeling fine, but no problem.
Good.
because he's got the same couple of times, and like, even right now he's like me, is through the roof, he's panics through the roof because he knows that we're having this conversation about this, you know.
Yeah, of course.
So I think this is the issue what we have spoken about and stuff. You know, he'll feel a bit better, but while I go through his right now, I know that he's
yeah, right. Well, I'll let you go and I'll let
you. Yeah, and I'll send you that email. And
yes.
And ask for that, and I'll explain that to him as well. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Your colleagues have probably said this to him already, yet he's not been able to process that and relay that on to me. Even when I mentioned redress to him, he didn't say, oh, yeah, that's what, no, see.
Yeah.
That's what I mean,
it's
yeah.
It's completely understandable. Yeah. Completely
okay, thank you so much. It was
no
nice
problem
talking
at
to
all, Michelle. You
okay,
too.
Enjoy the rest of your day, okay?
I will. You
thank
too,
you
Michelle.
Now.
Thank
okay.
you very much. All the
thank
best.
You.
Take care.
You too now. Bye-bye.
See you now.